Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Dan Campbell should not be talking for more than 30 seconds at a time. It just it loses steam. It loses inspiration. He starts bumbling. He's like massaging his wrists. The big takeaway where people are like, he did burpees. I'm like, can he fucking game plan? I know he can work out. I know he can work out.
That is the game plan.
It's a mountain of muscle. But can he game plan? No, he can't.
Hello, welcome to Take Glide. I'm your host, Jason Concepcio. Today, I am joined by one of the greatest to be doing it currently, and certainly one of the greatest to ever do it, Zach Harper of The Athletic and many other podcasts, such as Cinephobe, such as The Athletic NBA Show, and many others. He's here to talk NBA offseason. We're also going to talk about, EPL versus NFL documentaries. And we're going to be joined by the New York Daily News' Christian Winfield to just unpack the mess that is the Brooklyn Nets. But first, what is up, Zach? Zach, how are you?
Excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful.
What kind words?
Yes. You are one of the greatest to do it. That's true.
I agree, but it's just nice to hear.
Okay. Folks, I don't know if we've got some EPL Premier League fans here. I know Ryan is a fan of the footy. I know Zuri has dabbled in it. Zach, I don't know where you are at with it. But I just want to say that if anybody out there is looking to get on, to get involved in EPL soccer, in football, in the English Premier League, the greatest, the richest, the most competitive soccer league in the world, it's a great time right now because there's just like a lot of great storylines. Manchester United, who won more championships than anyone ever in the history of the league, is on its fucking ass. Highly touted manager from Ajax, Erik ten Hag, is blaming everybody but himself. The Glazers, the American owners of Manchester United, if they set foot in the country, would probably be tarred and feathered and rode out of town on a rail. And then a viral moment from this weekend, Thomas Tuchel, the manager of Chelsea, and Antonio Conte, the manager of Tottenham Hotspur, former Chelsea manager, had a handshake that turned into just like a grip contest. Did you see this, Zach?
Yeah, it's the only thing I saw from soccer this weekend. As I'm not a soccer man. I'm not against it. I just like I don't know where to start. Right, like I don't know where to dive in. But you show me a video of two men shaking hands.
I love it
too much. Too much. Well, it wasn't. Yeah, you're right. It's not even a handshake. It was just a. Can I squeeze your hand longer than you can squeeze my hand?
Can I just continue to squeeze your hand? Can I hold your hand?
It feels like one of those off-strip casino games in Vegas Vacation, right? That Randy Quaid would play. Like it seems that's what it looked like. Just who can hold whose hand longer.
So apparently, it was a hotly contested match. Tottenham had not beaten Chelsea in like 5 million years and ended up tying the game on a like at the death Harry Kane goal. And they go to shake hands, the managers, and apparently the issue for Thomas Tuchel was that Conte didn't look him in the eye when he was just tried to do the Belichick, like, I'm going to walk by you, handshake, like, quick handshake and then walk by you. And then Tuchel was like, no, I'm going to hold on and you're going to fucking look at me in my eyes. Yes, Zuri.
Sorry, no, I'm looking at the tape. I'm reviewing the tape right now. I don't think Tuchel looks Conte in the eye. He kind of glances by him as well. So it's like, what are you even upset about?
How does everyone feel about, do we care if somebody looks you in the eye if you get a handshake at the end of a hotly contested sporting event?
I mean, the context at the end of that is what kind of puts it at less problematic than I think my initial reaction was. I think that it shows it's sportsmanship, it's gamesmanship. It takes a third of a second to do right. To not look someone in the eye shows like some level of contentiousness, but it was that type of match. But it's definitely a strong arm move to be like, nah, you look me in the eye after that type.
I think part of it too is that, you know, Tottenham defender Christian Romero pulled his man's hair and probably cost them a goal and didn't get red carded or carded or anything. And that, you know, you could argue, I think, fairly justifiably, it cost Chelsea the win. But, like, you know,
why are we still shaking hands at the end of matches and games? Is this Pleasantville?
I think it's for the kids. It's for the kids, Zach. For the kids. So the kids grow up and they know and they understand, like, listen, adults are fucked up and everything they do is fucked up. But it's very, very important to have this kind of performative politeness, because
Jason,
if you don't, shit just goes off the rails.
Me to clutch my pearls and say, what did the kids learn this time? Right.
I want to say I wouldn't care, but in my normal life, when I'm walking down the street and I give someone a head nod or we get into the proper proximity, I feel disrespected. We're two human beings, like. Yes. Let's just have this
moment. That's true. That's true on that level. I agree. But I do think, like, in a context of sports, of again, very competitive sporting men, that, you know, it's kind of, if I disrespect you, that's kind of cool, isn't it?
This is better, for sure.
It's very trendy right now to disrespect.
Yeah, I think it's a little cool. Yeah. The kids are all doing it. Zach, I wanted to pitch you, if you're looking to get into the beautiful game,
I am.
Then Amazon Prime has a series called All or Nothing, and it'll be like All or Nothing Juventus, All or Nothing Man City. There's a couple of NFL ones, right? I think they did the Cardinals.
They do Rams at one point, I think.
They did the Rams, I think, too. Yeah, mm-hmm. And this season they're doing All or Nothing Arsenal. Now, that is my favorite team, so I am biased here. But I will say, they give them some really, really great access.
Okay.
This season there is a kind of like culture dispute with the star striker of the team, where the manager, Mikel Arteta, kind of has to put his foot down. And it's risky because they don't really have anybody that can score goals other than Aubameyang, who ended up just kind of like randomly going to Barcelona, he said, like on a family trip, but obviously also to be scouted by the team and to maybe sign over there. And it's great. Mikel Arteta, who I have been critical of, I completely fell in love with him over the course of six episodes now. He's just like, you just get a lot of insight, one, into how hard it is, especially with a young team. And he said something that really, I think, put a lot of the previous years of Arsenal and certainly the years under him in context. He said, you pay for the education of young players with points, meaning when you play young players, they're going to cost you the game sometimes. But that is the investment you make so that at the end of this, at the end of 2 years or 3 years or whatever, you have a cohesive team that understands how to play. And it's just, it's been great. It's really, really inspiring. Zach, give it a try. You know, it's an international cast of characters.
Okay.
They're like guys having fun. The trainers are fun. The coach is a charismatic guy. I think you'd enjoy it.
All right, I'm into the idea, because I have at various points over the last few years, this is something I didn't know, is that as Twitter really took off, all of a sudden people were like, oh yeah, this is my EPL team. And I was like, wait, we're doing that? I didn't know people were doing this. But it was just like I was the outsider. I'm the outsider in this, because I didn't grow up following any of this. I don't know any of this. Like, I play FIFA, you know, I'm trying to get... I'm trying to get, I don't even know, promotion. I'm trying to get Nottingham Forest promoted to the.
Oh, they're in. They're in.
I'm just talking about my FIFA world. I took them trying to get up.
Well, let me tell you, this is why it's the perfect time for you, Zach.
Okay.
Nottingham Forest, one of the signature teams of the late 70s and 80s, two European Cups, came out of nowhere. They made a movie about that era with Michael Sheen as their manager, whose name's now escaping me. You know, really cool logo with the tree, and they're all red. They are, after the most perilous fall, maybe of almost any like professional sporting club, where they went from two European Cups to falling out of the top league. They're back in the Premier League this year after 22 years in the wilderness, lower league. So they're back. They're back.
So now do they also have a 17-year-old American named Zach Harper scoring three goals a game? Because that also helps me get invested.
They know, but I think if they could buy such a player, I think they absolutely would because they need they need stuff like that. But I'm telling you, Zach,
he's going to be on loan pretty soon. Let me tell you. Trying to get some money here.
It's a World Cup year. You're Nottingham Forest.
I do love the World Cup. I do love
the
World
Cup.
Flight.
Yeah. It's a great time to get in.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm in. I will watch this. I'm hoping it's more inspiring than what the Lions are doing to me with Hard Knocks.
Oh, tell me about it because I need
because
to start this.
Because look, I go into a lot of these thinking I don't believe in this team, right? Raider, I'm anti Raiders on everything. I just hate the fucking Raiders. I worked for them for a year. It's the only.
Oh
sports...
wait! I did. Yes. Okay. Well, let's table that because I need to know more about that.
Okay. Okay. So I hate them. I hate the fan base. It's my only like real thing. Like I don't like the Mets as a Braves fan. Even though I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right. Like ultimately, I don't care. Braves won the World Series. They win this year. I don't give a shit. But I want the Raiders to suffer every game. Every quarter of every game. Like, I want them and their families to suffer every fucking game. And so, when John Gruden comes out there and is like, you know, I'm not into dreams. I'm into fucking nightmares, right? And everyone's like, oh! And I'm like, they went 7-9. Like, they went 7-9 the next year. And then the real nightmare was his emails being leaked. Like, that's the real nightmare that he's probably not into. And then last year, I walked away from the Cowboys Hard Knocks thinking, holy shit, that's a talented team. And also thinking, I will never be scared of a Mike McCarthy coach team. To the point, they play the 49ers. They play the 49ers in the playoffs. And the whole time, I didn't let a sliver of doubt enter my mind because I just kept going back to him trying to talk up the movie Austin Powers to a bunch of 22-year-olds that were born after it came out. And so this year, I don't go into this having any expectations of the Lions, but I walked away from episode one, Jason, thinking this team is worse than I could have imagined from a coaching standpoint.
Okay, what made you feel that way?
Dan Campbell should not be talking for more than 30 seconds at a time. It loses steam. It loses inspiration. He starts bumbling. He's like massaging his wrists. The big takeaway where people are like, he did burpees. I'm like, can he fucking game plan? I know he can work out.
That is the game plan.
It's a mountain of muscle. But can he game plan? No, he can't. And then they're just highlighting the coaching staff because it's all former players, which they're relatively entertaining, but I don't think any of them are going to coach football well.
I watch it as well. I don't know. I'm inspired by Dan Campbell. I think he finds it after moments of like disillusionment, but the Aaron Glenn, Deuce Staley moment where they're kind of sparring with each other on the sideline. I just think that Deuce Staley's kind of a bully. Aaron Glenn's like keeps moving away from him. And there's like, I don't know, there's some fake valor in the show. Yeah. But the one thing I want to point out is like the camera work is really great. There's a lot of moments.
Always.
Dude,
always.
Beautiful. It is a beautifully put together show.
You can almost never see the cameras too. It's like very well thought out. There's moments where the whole team is breaking down and they're in a huddle and there's a camera guy on one knee in between like two giant thighs. And it's like, I just really appreciate the production of it.
There's a Jamal Williams speech that I laughed so hard at because it's not even like a pro athletes can't get emotional, can't cry. It's just that his voice cracks in a way when he's like, we're not our record. We could do it this year. We could make make it. And I'm like, are you trying to break out of like a military facility or like go 8-9? Like what? Like what's the goal here? Because I couldn't figure out like he's like, I care about y'all and all this stuff. I'm like, he's like, we're not our record. I'm like, you're the Lions, buddy. You are your, you're always your record when you're the Lions.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. If you know, if you're a coach, you know that that there's going to be cameras following you for the season. Do you take it up a notch speech-wise? You know, normally where you just be like a lot of F-bombs and, you know, we got to kick that team's ass and yada, yada, yada. Are you then thinking, you know what? This is going to live on. I gotta craft it a little bit more. I really got to bring it with this.
This is the problem, though. It's like Dan Campbell tried that. You can tell he tried that. Like he had this thing where he's like, I'll fight. I don't care if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I'm like, that would be a demonstrably easier opponent. Someone with three toes and one ass cheek.
He's going to fight somebody with one ass cheek and three toes?
If he has to. That's what he said.
Give me the guy with one ass and three who has absolutely no core strength or ability to explode no balance. I'll push him over in the chest and they just go down because they have one ass.
A team of those guys are still 3.5-point favorites over the Lions next week.
Yeah, on the road. Right.
But also, like, I think this is all in the same speech, like where he then like starts talking about trying to drown the other team.
Oh, that was confusing.
Yeah. And then he tried to like make the light at the end of the tunnel is a freight train, right? It's not like hope. It's a freight train, except he bumbles that to where like he's about to deliver it. He goes, you guys know the Metallica song? There's a Metallica song that talks about this. It's like, just say the fucking thing. You don't have to credit your sources. There's no bibliography in this speech.
There's a bunch of like 23-year-old NFL players that are like, what?
I can see the gloss going over the eyes.
Yeah, like not even Aiden Hutchinson's like, yeah, I know Metallica. I know the Metallica song. Like, that's not happening.
Dan Campbell's all energy. It doesn't matter what he says. If the energy's right, then I'll play for him.
Oh, he is just nothing but a tornado of creatine. Like, it is spectacular.
When you're as bad, I say this as a Knicks fan, and I think, you know, Zach, you probably have a good handle on this as well. But I think when you're as bad as the Lions have been for as long as they have been, that's kind of at this point, Dan Campbell, whoever, it's about who is making these overall decisions at a certain point, isn't it? Because you've just brought in so many people, so many different coaching staffs at this point, that you kind of have to look at who's steering the entire ship, don't you?
I mean,
for the Knicks, it's James Dolan, right?
It's Mr.
takes
Mr.
over, blah blah blah. Like
Guitar James,
for the Timberwolves, it's been Glenn Taylor owns his team. Look how bumbling they are, right? Like for the Kings, it's been it was the Maloofs and then it was Vivek, and that's tough.
I mean,
that's
that
a
was
tough transition
just,
right there. That's a rough one. But yeah, like it always has to come back to above even the high level people, right? It's at the top with this stuff. I've said this a bunch of times, but like the Cleveland Cavaliers don't have a championship if LeBron's born in New Mexico.
Oh yeah, no.
Right? Like Dan Gilbert kind of lucked into one there in a way, but he's been a bumbling owner in so many ways. Like, this is a situation with the Lions where it goes beyond Dan Campbell and Jared Goff and everyone tasked to like talk trash on the sidelines and give us good TV.
I say this as a way to bring up the EPL again, because over there has been an influx of American ownership of English soccer teams, not just at the Premier League level, but below the Premier League level. Famously, like Rob McElhenney just bought Wrexham FC.
I can't wait for that documentary, by the way. I'm ready.
That's going to be fun. And there's a significant distrust in the English sporting culture of American ownership because the view, and I think fair view, is that Americans don't like to spend money. And when they spend money, it's all money that they borrowed from somebody else.
Absolutely.
And with the Glazers, the American owners of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Manchester United, they the criticism of the Glazers is that, one, they borrowed money from Manchester United to buy Manchester United. I'm kind of simplifying it, but essentially they leveraged a debt deal to buy Manchester United. And so Manchester United has been paying down this significant debt ever since the Glazers have owned the team. And their ownership of the team has also coincided with, you know, a horrific and crumbling run of form, to the point that, you know, fucking Manchester United are currently on their worst start post Sir Alex Ferguson. And they just got fucking crushed by 4 goals to Brentford, of all teams. And it's very significantly about the ownership. Like, it's a lot about the ownership. There needs to be a way to, like a dunk tank or something. Like, at the end of the, like, don't you think, like, at the end of the year, I get it. Yeah. We can't make you, we can't force you to sell, you know, once you have purchased something. But there needs to be something in there if a team is bad for, like, 5 or more seasons, to where we can clearly lay it at the feet of ownership, where, like, everybody gets to, like, shove a pie in the face of the owner, like, at the end of the season or something.
What about, like, the Game of Thrones, like, walk of shame, right? Like, just make them walk naked, like, from the office down to the stadium or whatever, and, like, you know, make it a healthy walk, and we'll set it up to where, like, people can't actually, like, really throw stuff at them, because you got to make it safe and buy it. But, yeah, that should be part of owning a team. Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be cool too if there was an owner that, like, if the team made more money than they expected to make, they just, like, paid fans back the excess? Like, you know, like the most like passionate fans get, like, a check in the mail. Like, you know,
communism. Got,
yeah.
I think that is an amazing
idea. Let's support that team.
I think that would have,
like, a rebate.
Like a rebate.
We did too well. Yeah. Rebate, right?
Right, like, here you go. Here's $250.
Hey guys, I was gonna get another 800 meter yacht, but instead, here is 2 vouchers for free drinks for the upcoming season.
That is a man of the people.
Dude, the New York Giants gave here's a medium Pepsi for our
Thank you so much for your support.
Sorry for watching Danny Dimes. Here's medium diabetes for you. Right?
Yeah. It would be a discount on an expensive jersey anyways that you have to buy. So.
Yeah, this rebate is only valid in the team shop.
Well, Zach, I'm going to be keeping track of this. Listen, if you decide that you want to support an EPL team, I'm here to bounce ideas off of. I'm sure.
I don't know how to pick. I think that's the thing. I don't know how to get invested. So I'll watch All for One, All In,
All or Nothing,
All or Amazon Nothing. Yeah, All for One is a Bryan Adams banger, right? That's what that is. All for Nothing. I'm in. Like, I'm gonna watch that, and then I'm gonna need help, like, picking a team.
You know, I would say just watch the league generally. Just watch good football. See if anyone sticks out. It's almost like adopting a dog, right? Like, you just go in and you see if somebody, like, connects with you.
I feel bad for this one. I'll take it.
But I would also say, don't torture yourself. Like, don't be like, oh, I hear Southampton has a long history of, you know, like, yeah, like, pick a team that's actually in the mix too.
So Man U would not be the right choice right now. Okay.
No, don't pick Man U.
For various reasons, don't pick them, right? Obviously, again, the most winningest team in history, but it's going to be shaky for a little while with them, for years. But, you know, like, Liverpool, Tottenham, even Arsenal, who are in the come up right now, Chelsea.
Or my FIFA guys, Nottingham.
Yeah. Nottingham.
I picked strictly because of Robin
Hood. They're fun.
I picked that team strictly because of Robin Hood, and I like the logo. That
you know
was
what?
It.
I think you might have found your team.
I was a Timberwolves fan when I was a child because I thought Wolves were cool. It's not a lot of logic to this.
Like, I mean, listen, I'm an Arsenal fan because they have a gun on the fucking badge. They have a cannon. They have a cannon on the badge, and Arsenal sounded cool. And then at the time, they had the best player in the world, who I thought was the best player in the world, Thierry Henry, at the time. Yeah. So it was like an easy bandwagon pick for me, and I've stuck with it. So don't feel bad about going bandwagon, but also, like, listen, Nottingham Forest, great history of a club,
and Robin Hood.
And in the top league, trying to do some damage to the teams with Champions League.
Yeah, shake some shit up. Yeah, all right, let's go. Let's go, Forest. Is that what you? I don't know what you say.
Something like that. And that's the other thing. Like, there's the songs. You'll see.
YouTube them. Yeah. YouTube the Nottingham Forest songs, and you will find them.
I'm gonna pick it strictly on the songs, actually. I don't know why. I don't know why I was thinking anything other than, like, I'm just gonna pick the songs I like the best.
All right, up next, Christian Winfield.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Picture this. You're Joe Tsai. You're sitting in your office, right? You've got Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, the BBC, and C-SPAN on the massive bank of televisions that make up the one wall of your absolutely palatial office. And on all those screens, it is the growing tensions around the island of Taiwan after Nancy Pelosi's visit. You've got Chinese warships surrounding the island, launching missiles over it that were landing near Japan. Warships are practicing doing landings on the beaches there to seize the island back. And as you're watching this and your sweat is breaking out on your brow, because, of course, you're tightly connected business-wise, culturally, et cetera, to China. And this is, you know, you've got family members and loved ones that you're worried about. Could war possibly break out? And as you're doing this, your phone rings. You answer it. It's your assistant. Your assistant says, Kevin Durant is here, wants to talk about the direction of the team. And then you have to let Kevin Durant in. And while war is looming and threatening, you now have to talk with Kevin Durant about, like, I don't like Steve Nash. Can we get rid of this guy? To help us figure out all of that is the New York Daily News' Christian Winfield. He's going to take us into Joe Tsai's office. Christian, how are you?
I'm not going to take you into Joe Tsai's office. That conversation happened in London, right? I believe Kevin and James Harden were out there supporting Travis Scott during that concert, and Joe Tsai linked up with them. They had that conversation out there. But yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, you had the best team in basketball, right? And now you're talking about you got a team with Ben Simmons and maybe no Kyrie. And we don't know what's going on. The Nets are a mess, man.
So where do we stand right now? Where are things right now?
Things have kind of been the same way for about a month now, right? Where you don't know if Kevin is going to be here. And if he is going to be here, it's going to be uncomfortable as hell. You have this weird situation with Kyrie, who says he wants to be here long term, but maybe the GM doesn't. That whole situation played out publicly, which was weird. And then you have a team right now that kind of makes sense, but also kind of doesn't, because you have Nick Claxton on a 2-year deal, but you don't really have that enforcer of a center yet. And you're kind of looking around this roster. But at the same time, it's like, well, if Kevin Durant decides to come back, you still got a Nets team that could win a championship this year, right? So on one end, nothing has changed. But with this ultimatum, kind of like everything has changed. So it's crazy right now in Brooklyn, man. It's almost like what I would think it feels like covering the Knicks, but in Brooklyn. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Christian, the vibes it gave me, and a little bit of, like, I don't know what the Nets plan is with this situation. Like, I know it's like, hey, why don't you just play this year out? Let's see what happens, right? And then, or part of it could be the second we get a deal where, like, 30 draft picks are suddenly allowed to be traded, like, we'll take that, right? But it feels, I got the same vibes as, like, when Jimmy Butler wanted out in Minnesota, in the sense of Tom Thibodeau just kept thinking, we'll get him to camp. He loves basketball. He'll be back in the camaraderie and be back with the guys, and then everything will kind of fix itself. And obviously the opposite happened. But with the Nets and KD, I do wonder if, like, not saying other guys and other stars around the league don't love the game, but, like, KD is legitimately obsessed with playing basketball, right? In a way, like, even for an NBA superstar, like, it is above and beyond. I do wonder if there is a strategy in, like, He's going to get back on the court. He's not going to want to half-ass it because he's who he is. And maybe that at least gives us some breathing room.
You know, that's an interesting train of thought. I've been told by sources that have been talking to me this whole time that, you know, there's a growing chance that Kevin holds out a training camp, right? And then if he holds out a training camp, what happens? That said, you know, I still think it's in both the Nets and in Kevin Durant's best interest to find a way to make this thing work. You know, I was just having a conversation the other day. Any team that trades for Kevin Durant, I think, maybe outside of the Celtics, are no longer contenders because of what they'll have to give up to get him, right? If the Celtics, even the Celtics, if you had to give up Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, you're hoping that Malcolm Brogdon is going to give you a whole healthy season, because if not, you're probably going to lose to the Bucks at some point.
Right.
Every other team, whatever they're giving up, maybe not the Pelicans, right? If the Pelicans could give up Brandon Ingram and some picks and maybe another player, you're in the clear, but that's only if Zion is healthy. Everybody else, you're giving up what it's going to take to win a championship. You look in Brooklyn, if you've got a healthy Ben Simmons, if you've got Kyrie motivated on a one-year deal, contract year, has to earn that next deal, and you've got Kevin Durant, who, as we know, loves basketball, wants to win, and you still have that mid-level exception, you might arguably be championship favorites in the East in all of basketball, right? So I think it makes sense for them to come back. But at the same time, you go to your team owner and say, hey, you got to fire the GM. You got to fire Steve Nash.
That's a tough one. That's a tough hurdle to get over, yeah.
I don't know how that works.
I don't know if Kevin's the type of guy who's going to come in and start throwing basketballs at people when training camp starts, if he does report, because we heard about all the reports with Jimmy Butler and what happened in Minnesota. But it's just a weird situation.
Right.
And it's just like, how do you get by this? I mean, there's one train of thought where it's like, yeah, these are all grown men. They'll be able to get over. Like, no, these are guys with egos. We know how this can work. And man, it's a mess. It is a mess.
So the reason for my Joe Tsai preamble was because it seems to me like this is significantly coming down to kind of a battle of the wills between two erstwhile stars of the Nets, Kyrie Irving and KD, and whatever Joe Tsai wants to do. Is he going to back Marks and Nash? And how much? And is he going to hold Kyrie and KD's feet to the fire? I think we saw with the Kyrie vaccination kind of like ongoing conversation that there came a point where Joe Tsai was just like, I don't give a shit, like either do this or don't. And then he kind of backed down and that kind of blew back on him in an embarrassing fashion. And then it seemed like he was going to back his team and he was like, fine, you guys want to go, you can go. And then when nothing really emerged market wise, he was also happy to just sit back and let that happen. Is there any kind of indication about, you know, what level of annoyance Joe is willing to put up with in order to reassemble this team? Or is he perfectly happy to be like, if we want to blow this thing up, we can do that too?
Here's one thing. On the Nets official website, Joe Tsai is listed as governor and Sean Marks is listed as alternate governor, right? As well as GM. So that kind of shows you just how far Joe is going to go to back his guy, in my opinion. And, you know, there's just been some talk that, hey, Joe and Sean gave Kevin the guy he wanted in Steve Nash. From everything that I've been told, it was the other way around. Steve is Sean Marks' guy. Kevin signed off on it. Kyrie signed off on it. And now you've got this guy who has no head coaching experience trying to lead a championship team, which we all knew wasn't going to work. Everybody except Sean Marks apparently thought it was a terrible idea. And here we are now. At a certain point, what level of annoyance are you going to put up with? I mean, you had to deal with a guy like Kyrie who decided he didn't want to play for 2 weeks because the insurrection at the Capitol happened. I think at a certain point they've had enough of it. But at the same time, this is what comes. Like, you have to give to get in a way. And when you're, I consider it blessed, right? I remember covering the Nets when they were winning 20 games, 28 games. And then one day, one tweet from KD and Kyrie says Brooklyn, and now you're knocking on the door of a championship every year. Are you willing to put up with a little bit of annoyance, if you want to use that word, that lets you knock on that door every year? If you knock on that championship door every year, eventually that door is going to open, right? And I think at a certain point, and it's tough though, because this was before that ultimatum was issued, right? This whole time I was saying, hey, at minimum, you're knocking on the door of a championship every year. At maximum, you're a dynasty. Just sign the checks, let them do what they do, and be grateful, because a couple years ago, you weren't even selling out. I remember when they're selling out stadiums now. They're selling out games at Barclays. I remember when there were no fans in that building at all. And the Nets fans would tell you, no, they were fans. No, there weren't. It was empty. And now you have a product that people are
just calling Nets fans flat out liars.
I have to.
I went to a Nets Magic game in like I don't know, 2012 or 2013 or something like that. And there were more Magic fans there. This is post-Dwight, by the way. Like, there were more Magic fans than Nets fans. I just remember thinking, what an amazingly weird arena experience. Because it's a dope fucking arena. Like, it's really cool. But yeah, it was a weird experience.
And now you're here where you're dominant. Every day, every time you wake up in the morning, they're talking about the Nets on ESPN, unless it's the other day where they weren't talking about the Nets at all for whatever reason.
Oh, I think we know the reason.
Yeah.
Talking about the Nets every day on every network. And if you try, I was having this conversation with somebody, even if Kevin Durant sits out, the story is still about the Nets. If you trade Kevin Durant for pennies on the dollar, you're losing fans, you're losing headlines, you're losing relevance. So that's what the stalemate is as well.
You're very well sourced around the Nets and in New York sports in general. What are the people, obviously not asking you to blow your sources, but if you want to, that'd be great. But like, what is the feeling of, like, is it bemusement? Are they just like, can you believe this stuff we're dealing with? Like, what are the people who are in that world feeling about the circus that is swirling around this team right now?
I told you, man, you're my number one source. You can speak for yourself if you want to. No.
I do love the idea of Jason just going, you know what? I know this stuff. I got I've got the sources.
You know, part of it is, you know, I've got people that have told me that Kevin Durant is so checked out from this situation that there's no way he just comes back on bygones, let's play basketball, right? And part of me doesn't want to believe that because at the end of the day, I still feel like his best chance to win at a high level is going to be in Brooklyn because of what other teams are going to have to give up to get him. But from the Nets side of things, you know, there's some people who believe that the Nets still want this to work. Right. They believe that Josiah is just going to stand his ground and hope that one day Kevin Durant is going to come around and play. And if not, he's not going to trade him for a lesser package. And that's just tough because now you've got this situation where you're going to drag this thing out and you're going to waste a season in a way. Right. And it's just a terrible situation to be in. But at the same time, I feel like this is what happens when you had Sean Marks come out a week after Kyrie said, I want to co-manage the franchise with Sean and Joe. I will never forget that quote. And a week later, Sean Marks basically says, hey, Kyrie, no, you didn't play enough games. We don't buy that.
Yo, Kyrie is a blessing. I mean, he just, oh my God. Remember when he said, I don't even think we have a coach. Like, I could be the coach. KD could be the coach. You know, Jacques Vaughn could be the coach.
That's the thing.
It's spot on, yeah.
To be fair to him, he wasn't even saying, like, I want to co-manage. He was saying, I love that we co-manage this. He was basically saying it as a statement of fact that Jason, he enjoyed.
I love my relationship with Rihanna. Like, it's amazing. Like,
too.
This is just what I do. You know, we're so in love. And, you know, we talk all the time.
That is hilarious. But, you know, after that, things kind of changed because that at a certain point, the messaging from the Nets side that got leaked to ESPN was, you know, we're willing to lose KD and Kyrie over this. And at that point, when you're publicly posturing like that, when you're blessed enough to have these two stars, and I say blessed because, you know, how often in NBA history do you have two guys of this caliber choosing a team that I remember winning 28 games just a couple of years ago? Now they're coming on completely reinventing this franchise. My standpoint is you do whatever it takes to keep them happy, to keep them there, because at a certain point, they're going to get you to the NBA Finals. Remember, just a couple years ago, they were about to go there with Kyrie Hurt, with James Harden on one leg. I watched Kevin Durant last year. The Nets had maybe 8 players in health and safety protocols. He's on the floor with 4 rookies, beat Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, 76ers. At that point, I'm like, oh, this man is special. And now you're talking about publicly, oh, we're willing to lose both of them just because? Like, nah, it's crazy, man.
Christian, that's where, you know, we have whenever an athlete speaks out against anything, it's just, you know, it's the shut up and dribble response. I do wonder with Josiah tweeting, is there a point where we just go, hey, buddy, shut up in business right now? Like, just do the Tillman Fertitta and just like, just shut up in business. Like, don't, like, maybe you shouldn't be tweeting. So in your opinion, like, has this public stance from Josiah helped matters? get resolved, help them take a strong stance. I look at it kind of just like, it's great content. I'll take it. But I don't think like he should be doing that.
No, I don't think that's part of the issue with on the Nets side is they didn't enjoy how some of these negotiations played out in the media.
Sure.
I'm sorry people leaked me what was happening. Like I just happened to get some of that info and here we are. But then for the ownership to then publicly respond, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah.
Maybe Mark Cuban did it once. I don't know. I would bet that he'd be the guy that did it.
Dan Gilbert's letter?
Like, yeah, the letter.
Yeah.
That might be it, but to then do that publicly, I mean, I don't know. That just goes to show you how much of a mess it is right now. Every week that you get closer to training camp is a week where you risk some type of nuclear bomb going off. And now it's just unsalvageable. So we'll see what happens. Well, how many weeks? 5 weeks until training camp? 6 weeks?
If you had to guess which one, because obviously I think if one goes, they both go. And one of them has to be the kind of first to go. There have been,
Oh, no, the first to go is, wait, you're talking about Sean and Steve, if one of them goes?
Let's do both sides of it. So Sean or Steve, Kyrie, KD. What happens first? Somebody actually puts the amount of picks and assets on the table to get Kyrie or KD. Which one of those things is more likely to happen? And then which is more likely? Who's more likely to survive? Steve Nash or Sean Marks?
That's funny. I think we know the answer to the second one already. So the first
the second one is very easy. That is very simple. I think I can coach the team if you give me the right assistants around me.
Yeah. At this point, not the alternate governor.
Right. Maybe yeah.
Like if that's how it's listed on the website.
I don't think there's any universe where Kyrie gets traded before KD. I don't think that ever happens. Potentially, if the Nets can keep Kyrie Irving a Net for the rest of his career, I think that's still on the table as long as he proves that he'll be willing to play and show up to work and do. Listen, I understand why the Nets did what they did with Kyrie to a certain extent, right? Like the man was going crazy in terms of just not playing just because he didn't feel like it, you know? And I've said this before, the vaccination portion of it, I kind of understand your body, your choice. I get making that call, but everything before that, just missing games, the just blatant disregard for COVID protocols. We saw him basically in a club with no mask, right, around a bunch of people. That I think that did more damage to him than not getting vaccinated. The Kevin Durant stuff, I think a team would have to put so much. I think that would be the first domino to fall, right? You'd see Kevin Durant get traded first, and then the Nets would be like, okay, well, do we even want to keep Kyrie here? Are we rebuilding? Can we get 2 draft picks and extra young players for him? Then that would happen. So it would be KD gets traded first, then Kyrie. On the Sean Marks, Steve Nash side, I think if everybody sat down without Steve Nash and KD says, hey, I'll stay, but we need a new head coach, you know, I trust Sean, I think Steve would be gone fast. You know, at this point, it's not really a secret anymore. He's been outcoached by a lot of his peers. It's just my opinion. I don't think he was the right guy for the job from the jump, right? I think you should have gotten somebody with some type of NBA championship pedigree, let it be coaching or let it be whatever it is. He didn't even win a championship as a player. Right. And this is the guy that you got to coach a team that you had set championship expectations for.
Damn.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take. I mean, I did. Whatever. This is where we are. So it's unfortunate. But yeah, if Sean Marks is an excellent general manager.
I agree with that.
He's really good.
Up until the point where he started having to make decisions for these guys, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, everything else he did was basically bulletproof. And then the missteps started coming, which coincided with the vaccine. If COVID-19 never happened, I think the Nets have a championship right now.
And that's really the important thing. If COVID didn't happen, is that the Nets
would have. Kyrie keeps saying. Except he doesn't use the if. He just says COVID didn't happen.
I mean, is there any you mentioned Marx's ability as a GM, and I completely agree with you. Is there any ruining, like, what was before they made the moves for Kyrie and KD? Is there any amount of wistfulness for the team?
Like a pre-star culture, almost? Like,
I mean, pre-star culture is sure, but pre-star results, no. You got to take the stars and everything they come with.
Hold on, Christian. What we're not going to do here is erase the magical run that I had watching Spencer Dinwiddie. I was all in on Spencer. I still am, but yeah.
You know, Spencer's a great guy. He's good. But at the same time, the ceiling on that team was what? Getting swept by the Toronto Raptors, getting swept by the Philadelphia 76ers out of the first round. I mean, at the end of the day, that team is only going to get you but so far. If the question is, if they could go back in time, make a different decision, would they make the other decision? Answer is no. right? We're talking about the Nets right now on this podcast. Why? Because they have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, not because they got Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert.
When they had Wilson Chandler, I could not stop talking about them.
Listen, man, that's a good dude right there, man. Wilson Chandler's a real good dude.
Well, I mean, technically, because Jason just kept saying, Wilson Chandler's still fucking playing? This is crazy.
Yeah. He was definitely past his prime while he was with the Nets, unfortunately. But I think that's what they want. And this is one of those classic cases of the phrase that nobody seems to understand, probably, which is you want to have your cake and eat it too, right? Like the Nets want to have their stars, but they also want to have this culture where they can control everything. And that's not, they want to have this Spurs type culture with this roster that looks like, you know, Showtime Lakers or Miami Heat. And it just doesn't work that way, right? You have to be Pat Riley. They're not Pat Riley, right? That's not how it works. So, yeah.
Maybe it depends on what Ben Simmons ends up actually being. And I've already had to fight. Yeah. I had one person try to tell me, like, hey, have you seen the Ben Simmons like summer stuff? I said, no, I'm not watching that stuff anymore. Like, I got to see real basketball out of him. Right. Maybe this depends on what Ben Simmons ends up being for the Nets. But do you think there's any chance they regret the Harden trade at this point?
Oh man, that's a great question, because because then what's the worst case scenario if you don't trade James Harden, right? Then you're dealing with that right now.
I mean, to even acquire him. I mean, to acquire, like, to go out and acquire him. Because, like, you give up Jared Allen, who's obviously very good. You give up Caris LeVert. Like, there was some real talent that went out the door there.
100%. But at the same time, you had James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving on the same team. You do that, in my opinion. I think Sean Marks would have done the same thing. You do that 11 times out of 10. Every single time you can put those three guys on the floor together. Now, would they have maybe not traded James Harden midseason and just said, hey, deal with it, play and figure it out. You take a healthy James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and put them against those Boston Celtics. I don't know. I think you got a shot, right? Yeah. So it's tough. I think maybe. And then this also takes me back to some decisions that, like I said, you know, COVID messed everything up and the decision-making from there. What if you don't banish Kyrie Irving at the beginning of the season? What if you say, hey, you can practice with us and you can play road games, you just can't play home games until we get the situation resolved? Kyrie didn't play 16 road games until the Nets said, hey, you can play. If he plays those 16, maybe him and James Harden find some type of rapport, some type of chemistry on the floor, and maybe now March doesn't come around and he wants to put a bullet in Kyrie or a shot in him, right? He wanted to get up out of there, so it's tough. And that's why I say, you know, some of those mini decisions that Sean Marks made. And then the one blemish on Sean Marks' record, obviously, is hiring Steve Nash. That was the big one. Yeah. But other than that, he's been amazing. But to your other point, from everything that I've heard about Ben Simmons this summer, I've heard that his back has been holding up pretty well and that he also looks really, really good on the floor. The issue is now, from what I've been told, the Nets want to play him at center. And they want to play him a bunch of different places on the floor.
Let's fucking go.
If you play him at center and he's guarding, you know what I'm saying, guys that want to post him up, and I just don't know how that works with a guy who's just got back surgery, right? Like, think that you don't want him to guard 300-pound men.
Right. Christian, like, one, we've all seen the clip of Giannis calling him a fucking baby because he couldn't handle Giannis in the post, which, no stress there. Nobody can handle Giannis down there.
Yeah, nobody can do that. Yeah, that's fine.
But still, don't worry about it. But still, he doesn't usually dunk on someone and then call him a fucking baby over and over into a camera. But also, I don't know if you get excited hearing, hey, this 26-year-old, his back is holding up. Like, that's a confusing sentiment to get excited about. Like, that's something where I'm just like, I don't know about that. That's actually not a good, that's not a good thing to hear.
I mean, listen, any good news about Ben Simmons is better. Listen, I remember covering the Nets when every single day was a new Ben Simmons update and none of it was good. It was all just terrible. And then it was, okay, he got an epidural. The epidural happened weeks ago. Why didn't you guys tell us when it happened? You know, it was crazy. And then, oh, he had back spasms. The back spasms happened a little while ago. He had an MRI. Man, covering the Nets was a headache. I say all that to say, a healthy Ben Simmons is a great thing. Any good news about Ben Simmons is a
really good player.
Yeah. And I think that's understated. People will look at that Atlanta series, the fact that he didn't want to shoot. That man will lock up your favorite player. That man will dunk on your favorite player. That man will get out in transition and create open shots for your favorite shooter. I think he's an amazing fit for these guys, as long as Kevin Durant is on the team.
Just real quick, I'm not asking anyone to report anything, but we all agree that he left the group chat story just because it's fun, right? Like, I don't even want facts on this. I just want us all to agree it's a funny story, just like Kawhi Leonard Apple time. We're all agreeing that it happened.
As funny, I wish I could confirm that happened, but the New York Daily News is unable to confirm Rick Bucher's reporting.
Jason, that's not a no.
Not a no.
I am unable to confirm that report, so I'll leave it at that.
He is Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News. Christian, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate you guys for having me, man. Anytime.
You know what that sound means? That means it's time for Buzzer Beaters, where we talk about the stories and stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the show. Zach, what is your Buzzer Beater about this week?
As much as I do want to discuss an uneasiness I have with Russians due to the show For All Mankind, and no other reason, I got to talk about the rehearsal.
Oh, my God.
It's a show I'm obsessed with. I have gone driving around the valley to find points from the rehearsal.
No, you haven't.
So here's the thing, Jason. The Fielder Method of Acting School is located, or was located, I should say, two blocks from the last apartment I lived in. I moved here in October, and this place is two blocks away. I used to go over by that area all
the
time.
Holy shit.
And so I went over. I found where it was. I went over there. It is now a jiu-jitsu studio.
Oh, cool.
Which makes me wonder, has this been replaced, or is this part of the rehearsal where now Nathan is becoming a jiu-jitsu master? I don't know. I drove by a couple of times this past weekend, the acai bowl place that Nathan starts working at in Sherman Oaks because it's near my new place. Like, I cannot stop thinking about this show, and my parents live in Salem, Oregon, which is not that far from where a lot of this stuff is happening in the rehearsal season. When I go to visit them, you're damn right I'm going to go drive by all this stuff and try to find Nate's Lizard Lounge. Yes.
The thing that blows me away about the rehearsal is that it appears that they spend three Game of Thrones episodes worth of budget on every single, they're building entire homes, like fully furnished, entire electrified homes with cameras. They're building entire bars in warehouses and then shipping the bars to across the country.
Across the country.
How can this be happening?
As across the country as it can get.
Folks, it's unreal. For my buzzer beater, I'm going to do the one that you mentioned. I'm going to say For All Mankind. Folks, For All Mankind, here's what it is. For All Mankind is an alternate history show about the origins of a unified human space force, like, say, Starfleet in Star Trek. The idea being, you know, Star Trek, you know about these like incredible spaceships staffed by various human people from all nationalities and including various members of alien races. What would it take? What would the conditions need to be like here on Earth for that kind of force to actually happen? And we're in season three now. Season three finale just aired. And it's crazy shit, folks. Like, it's a banger. And not only is it great and wonderful sci-fi adventure action, but it's like corny in a way that I feel like I really need right now. Like, it's corny. Like, there'll be shit where it's like, the Russians and the Americans are completely at odds. Astronauts have accidentally been killed. And you just don't think that there's any way that this Russian cosmonaut's going to be able to work with this American who's also gay, which is playing out against the backdrop of the partisan politics of the 1990s. But then there'll just be like this big speech where it's like, you know what? I've always seen you as a person. I've always seen you as a person. And then you just do this soaring music. And that happens numerous times. And while, yes, I know that sounds corny, man, do I need that shit right now.
Yeah.
I just need people looking in each other's eyes and being like, you know what? Let's just cooperate. Let's just figure it out. Let's just figure out how we can just work together, even though everything around us says that we can't work together. What if we just figured it out? And that's really hitting home for me. For All Mankind, watch it now on Apple TV+. That's it for us. Follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel for our X-Ray Vision show, where you get lots of fun stuff from the X-Ray Vision podcast, which covers nerd culture, pop culture every week. Check it out. Goodbye. TakeLine is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Ryan Wallerson and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Engineering, editing, and sound design by the great Sarah DeWalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez. Mia Kelman is on the Zoom for Vibes, and the Vibes are fantastic all the time.